Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, there was a blind man, Bartimaeus, and he was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called the blind man, "Cheer up. On your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," Jesus told him, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Mark chapter 10, verse 46 through 52. It's an amazing story, and I want to tell you about it this morning. Mark, the Gospel of Mark, is set up in three stages, three acts. The first act is chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 8, verse 21. And that's Jesus' ministry in and around Galilee. Act 2 comes up at 8:22 and goes through chapter 10, verse 52, where we are today. And that's Jesus' road to Jerusalem. And Act 3 is chapter 11, verses 1 and following to the end of the book of Mark, and that talks about Jesus' time in Jerusalem. We're talking about Act 2 in Mark. We're actually talking about the very end story, and what's interesting is if you looked at Act 2 and you went back to the beginning of that in chapter 8, verse 22, there's the healing of a blind man. It's just that that healing of a blind man, the blind man is brought to him. It's more passive. This one, Bartimaeus has to use every resource that he has for Jesus to hear him so that he can get healed. It's a more active healing. So it's a bookend, this act, between chapter 8 and chapter 10 with two healings of blind people. What's another interesting thing about this is it is not just a healing story, a healing miracle. It is. And in fact, it's the last healing miracle that Jesus has in the book of Mark. For there's one more miracle in Mark, but it's not a healing miracle. So it's the last one of those, but it's also a call story. It's a calling because Jesus calls the blind man. This is one of the most important stories, and here we are. We're 1 week from Palm Sunday. And I began to think, David has been preaching about things that distract Jesus from the cross. His sermon series is no turning back because Jesus would not turn back. He continued to go toward the cross. I was preaching in between a couple of Davids and I had to come up with something with a C, if you'll notice on the front of your worship guide. So I came up with the call. But this is not a distraction. I'm going to call it an interruption. And it's just a brief interruption because Jesus continues his way to the cross, but it's an interruption because it's who Jesus is. Jesus is always about helping people, just sometimes not the people that we think. So this is one of those interesting stories. It's not only the last miracle story, it's the only story that's a miracle story in Mark that names a person. So we find out first that they enter Jericho. And as they're leaving Jericho, that's when they see Bartimaeus. And why Jericho? Well, Jericho's the last stop before Jesus goes to Jerusalem. We know Jericho because Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan. That 17-mile windy road that was very dangerous. It's an uphill road from Jericho to Jerusalem. Jericho's 825 feet below sea level, so it's a 3,500-foot ascent to Jerusalem. So it's a difficult road that they have to go. So Jericho is his last stop before they move into Jerusalem. That's why it's the end of that act. Not only are they in Jericho, but that's where we meet Bartimaeus. And as I told you, he's the only one that's named in a miracle story. And we know from this story what his name means. Son of Timaeus. Bar in Bartimaeus is Aramaic. It means son. And Timaeus means honorable. But here it's, and Timaeus is the Greek part of that, and Bar is the Aramaic part, so it's a combined word. And together it means son of Timaeus. Mark probably brought up Bartimaeus and Timaeus because his readers in that time would have known that he was a disciple in the early church. But he also probably brought it up because Bartimaeus, if you look at verse 52, is the only one that follows Jesus after a healing. So it's one of those interesting stories, and we find out who Bartimaeus is, but we also find out something else about Bartimaeus. He's blind. So this is one of those sermons that hits close to home for me, because Bartimaeus, he's an outcast. He's marginalized. He's treated insignificantly. He is kept from or not allowed to do certain things in society because of his disease, his disability. So he can't do things, including sometimes go to the temple in certain places of the temple. But he's excluded from things. I think about me because I've been in contacts for 39 years. Before contacts, I was in pop bottle thick glasses. So that's why I moved to contacts. I moved to contacts when I was 17. That's when a girl finally noticed me when I got out of those glasses. Marcy. And then, but if I didn't have my contacts in, I couldn't see any of you. I couldn't read that clock that's right here. I couldn't do a lot of things. I have one that's for farsightedness and one that's for nearsightedness. So if you see me read my Bible, I'm going to do like this and with one eye. But I'm thankful for contacts. So blind Bartimaeus, was he legally blind? Did you know that 1% of the population is born legally blind? Legally blind, most of us can see 20/20, whether with your vision or corrected vision. But legally blind is 20/200 and not correctable. Or if you're legally blind, your field of vision, which normally is a little more than a half a circle or 190 degrees, meaning you can see a little bit about out of each eye all the way around, a legally blind person, they can only see a field of vision of around 20 or less. But was he legally blind? You think about biblical times. How many people would have been on the side of the road begging with all of their different disabilities and ailments? Because, you see, they would have been on the side of the road just if they were visually impaired. See, only 1% is born legally blind, but there are millions of people who are visually impaired because of glaucoma, diabetes, and macular degeneration. Those are the things that take people's eyesights. And because of that, who knows what Bartimaeus had, and if his eyesight had gone away after he was born. Dick and Nancy McKinney were members of our church. Some of you may know who they are. Dick McKinney's parents were Walter and Barbara McKinney. They were wonderful people. They were members of my church, of Marcy's church, when we were down in Houston for 14 years. Walter and Barbara were very sweet. They sent us birthday cards and anniversary cards, sent my boys birthday cards for 14 years, sent us anniversary cards even after we got to Waxahachie. They thought it was cool that we were going to their son's church. I took Walter and Barbara McKinney on mission trips. We went to the city of Chihuahua in the state of Chihuahua, Mexico. We went to a clinic, and we had an eye doctor go with us, and we had Walter and Barbara, who collected eyeglasses all year long. We would go up into the mountains outside of Chihuahua with those eyeglasses and with that eye doctor. And when they could find somebody to help and put eyeglasses on somebody in the mountains who had never been able to see well, you just cannot imagine what people do when they are able to see. Their excitement. So that's what was wrong with Bartimaeus. He was blind, and we find out about that. And so we understand a little bit about what's happening. So Bartimaeus, he may not have everything, but he has one thing. He has something. He has his voice. You see, he says he shouts, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." He is shouting. He's using his voice. The kingdom of heaven is not for well-meaning people. It's for the desperate people. His desperation was this doorway to faith, because as he calls out to Jesus. He realizes, I'm desperate. I want to get off of what I'm on. I want sight. So he uses his voice. He uses his hearing. He hears that it's Jesus of Nazareth, it says. He uses other things, other senses. He's persistent. He is going to continue, no matter what, to shout until Jesus hears him. He's resourceful. Even though you may not have everything, you have something. And use those resources. Notice the title that he uses, Son of David. Bartimaeus and Peter are the only two people in Mark that use a messianic title for Jesus. Peter, earlier, when Jesus says, who do people say that I am? And they told him, and then he said, who do you say that I am? Peter said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. So Peter uses a title there in Christ, and now Bartimaeus uses one, Son of David. It's a royal, authoritative title. It's one that calls back a conquering Messiah, one who comes from the lineage of David and who will restore Israel to its greatness as a nation. It may not have been the right title, but it was one that caught Jesus' attention. Bartimaeus can see better with no eyes than the people around him with two eyes. He may not have eyesight, but he's got insight. But I want you to notice something. As he's shouting that, using his voice, somebody's telling him, be quiet. Who is this? Well, when we opened up the scripture, we found out that it was Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd together were leaving the city. Who is this large crowd besides the disciples? Well, they're people that have been following him, whether they're from Jericho and they picked up or before Jericho and picked up. But they're people that are self-centered. You see, they're accustomed to the blind people. Bartimaeus would not have been the only blind people. They didn't have glasses and contacts and all those other medical miracles back then. There would have been numerous people that would have been blind or had other ailments, begging on the side of the road. And these people, the crowd, they were accustomed to it. They knew that they could just walk right by. Did they think that these people deserved what they got because maybe they had sin in their life or their parents did? Yeah. Did they concentrate on their own problems and not the problems of somebody else? Yes, they put themselves first. But it's this crowd that tells him to be quiet. Why? Because maybe the authorities would hear him calling out Jesus in this messianic title and they would come and hurt them as well if they picked up Jesus. Or maybe it's because Jesus was teaching and they didn't want him to interrupt Jesus because he was yelling. Either way, they rebuked him. They told him to be quiet. You know, it says that the disciples were a part of the crowd, but I can tell you that I don't think it was the disciples that rebuked him. If you look back in Mark chapter 10, verses 13 through 16, that's the reason I don't think it was the disciples. Because they learned their lesson. You see, they tried to bring the children tried to come to Jesus and they tried to keep the children away. And Jesus was indignant toward them, it says. And he said, let the little children come from me. He had already gotten on to the disciples for keeping the children away. The disciples were probably sitting back saying, yeah, see how that goes for you to rebuke him. They already learned their lesson. But even though they tried to rebuke him and keep him quiet, what does he do? It says he shouted all the more. You see, he was persistent. And sometimes with our faith, we have to overcome obstacles. Mark's gospel is filled with people who overcame obstacles to find healing. And Bartimaeus is just one of them who overcame the obstacle of the crowd to continue to yell. Mark's gospel starts with one of the healings in chapter 2 where it's the friends that bring the paralytic man and they have to cut a hole in the roof to send him down to let Jesus heal him. They overcame. In chapter 5, it's the woman who has a blood disease who has to overcome a fear so that she can feel Jesus' healing touch. It's also in chapter 5 where Jairus has to overcome the news that his daughter has died as they're going out to see if Jesus can heal her. He has to overcome that to say, I still believe that Jesus can do that. In chapter 7, it's the Syrophoenician woman who has to overcome and persist in her request to Jesus, even though Jesus has told her, my mission is only to the Jews. And in chapter 9, it's the man who has the demonized son. And he says that he has to overcome not only faith, but he has to have more faith. That's why chapter 9, verse 24, it says, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. You see, he overcame barriers because he had faith and he knew that Jesus could help him. So that's when an amazing thing happens. It says Jesus stopped and said, call him. Jesus was interrupted. He stopped on his road to Jerusalem. He stopped for a poor, blind beggar on the side of the road. So John Canary, he wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul. He talked about a story in that book. It was about Charlie Boswell. So Charlie Boswell in World War II was trying to help a friend out who was in a tank caught under heavy fire. And in trying to help out his friend, he lost his sight. He went blind. Charlie was an amazing athlete. And his dedication and his persistence, he continued to say, I'm going to be an athlete. I'm going to try a new sport. One he never tried when he had sight. He became a golfer. He became a golfer and he won the National Blind Golf Association Award 13 times. In 1958, he met Ben Hogan when he got the Ben Hogan Award. When he met Ben Hogan, they were at a golf course and he told Ben Hogan, he said, I've always wanted to meet you. I would love to play a round of golf with you. And Ben Hogan, a great golfer, said, well, I would be happy to play golf with you. And he said, and if we're going to play, let's put a little bet on it, $1,000 a hole. Ben said, I am not going to play that way. What would people say about me? You're blind. He said, are you chicken, Mr. Hogan? He said, you're on. You name the time and the place. And Charlie said, tonight, 10 p.m. right here. You see, Charlie leveled the playing field. There's no way he could have played Ben Hogan in the daytime. But he leveled up. Jesus levels the playing field. This is a blind, poor beggar. You want to pay attention to him? And Jesus stops and said, call him. Now look at the interesting thing. Who calls him? Jesus said, call him, but who's he telling that to? The crowd. The same ones who were holding him back, telling him to be quiet, pushing him away, didn't care about who he was and what he was having to overcome. They're the ones that became Jesus' messengers. They're the ones that have to go after they've been hurling the insults at him and everything else, and they have to go to him. And they say, cheer up. Your version may say, take courage. It's that same word that Jesus has used 6 times in the New Testament. When the disciples were in the water and he came walking out to them on the water, he said, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. Take courage. He's always said it the 6 times before, but here on the 7th time, it's the crowd that says it. They said, be of good cheer. Take courage. On your feet, he's calling you. And then Mark puts this interesting little thing in. He says he takes his cloak and he throws it away. He gets off of the mat. I do not like to preach in one spot. Part of that's nervousness. I like to move around. It's tough when you're confined to one place. Bartimaeus was confined to the fabric that held his health and his economics, his blindness and his begging. But he believed that Jesus of Nazareth, the one he had heard about, could heal him. And when Jesus healed, if you remember, he made people whole again, that they could go back into society. Remember what he would tell them? Go show yourselves to the priest. You'll get back into society and be an active member. You will not be excluded after I heal you. And so he was excited about that. Alan Culpepper, a theologian, he said, discipleship mandates that we throw away the old self, the old things that are in our life, and that they are not pulled back to patch up or to retrieve at all. When we become a disciple of Christ, we get rid of things. For Bartimaeus, he was ready to put on Christ, Galatians 3:27 said. He was ready to put on a new thing, to become a new creation in Christ. He got rid of the cloak. Everything that he had was that. But it was not what he wanted. He wanted off of that. The disciples, they left boats, they left their tax desks, they left family, they left everything to follow Jesus. And here we find out Bartimaeus leaves things to follow Jesus. He got rid of the one thing that he was used to, but it had confined him. Do you feel comfortable in the place you are and you don't want to get up and go away? You don't want to follow Jesus? You don't want to do things? We become comfortable in our own little spot. But he threw the cloak away. He was ready to have something different. And then he comes to Jesus. That's the active part. He has to come to Jesus. Jesus doesn't go to him. Part of that for the call of the crowd and part of it for Bartimaeus. But when he gets there, Jesus asked him a question. What do you want me to do for you? What an interesting question. You cannot pray specifically until you recognize the point of your need. Until you admit the point of your need, you're not able to pray specifically. To examine yourself and say, Jesus, I am addicted to this sin and I need help. Jesus, I have a problem with anger and I need help. When you look inside of yourself and you see the problems that you have and you say, I want off of this thing that confines me. I need help. Will you help me from this? Let me throw that away and not call it back in my life. But we answer that question wrong so many times. We don't get that question right. We ask for things that help us, that bless us, that make us happier in life. And Deuteronomy 30:19 says, see, I've set before you blessing and curse and life and death. Choose life. And we choose wrong sometimes. We don't choose God's blessings. We want to think about our blessings and how we can benefit from that. We want God to do our bidding. God, take care of my enemy. He is hurting me. She is hurting me. Help me out. Notice Bartimaeus. His title changes. It's no longer Son of David. It's Rabbi, meaning my master. It's a disciple's title for Jesus, my teacher, my master. And in the most profound verse in the Bible, the blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. If you were to look back in Mark chapter 10, the story right before this one is of the sons of thunder, James and John. Look back in that. Do you know what Jesus asked them? What do you want me to do for you? He asked them the same question. Do you know what their answer was? I want to sit one at your right and one at your left in the kingdom of God. We want the power. We want the glory. And Jesus did not come for the power and the glory to give away. He came to heal. He came to help people. He came to serve. In fact, that's what it says. Jesus says, I came to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many in verse 45. James and John, they answered the question wrong. They wanted the extraordinary. Bartimaeus, he just wanted the ordinary. He just wanted to be healed. For most of us, normalcy is the bare minimum. God, help me to be normal today, which that's probably not a bad prayer for me sometimes. But normalcy is the bare minimum. But for those that have diseases, that have disabilities, that have lived through disasters, normalcy is a gift of God. And Bartimaeus asked the most simple, gives the most simple answer. If you go to a dentist today because you have a crazy toothache, and you go to him and he says, well, which one? And you say, oh, just pull anyone you want. You would not do that. You would be very specific. You pull just this one. It really hurts. But we cannot be specific when God is standing there and says, what can I do for you? What do you want me to do for you? He answers the question right. And then, notice the last verse. He tells him, go. Now, when it says go, he's told people that before that he's healed. Go back to your priest to show yourselves. Go back to your family that loves you. Go and give testimony of what I've done for you. Go to your loved ones. Why? Because they were outcasts in society and couldn't be around their loved ones, couldn't be in society. They were excluded. So he says, go. Your faith has healed you. Bartimaeus had an extreme faith. He believed so much he threw his cloak away because he knew Jesus was going to make him whole. He wouldn't need that again. But when Jesus tells him to go, Bartimaeus doesn't disobey Jesus. It's just Bartimaeus is the only one in the miracle group that decides to follow Jesus. Look at it real close in Mark chapter 10, verse 46 through 52. It says that Bartimaeus was on the side of the road begging, and after he became a disciple, he got on the road with Jesus. As a disciple, are you on the road with Jesus, or are you side of the road, still on the fabric? Still on that place where you feel comfortable? I was preparing for this sermon, and God has a way of helping you understand you're not as perfect as you think you are. So I'm preparing for this sermon. I think I've got this thing down. I know how to treat people, especially with disabilities and with diseases and have lived through disasters, all those things. And that Thursday, Carlos walked in. And when Carlos came in, he's a young man, didn't look like me. He came in and I asked him the question because I've been studying. I said, what do you want me to do for you? And Carlos said, I need to use the phone. You see, Carlos had been down in jail the night before. That's not unusual for those that get out of jail to make this the first stop. So Carlos used the phone. After he used the phone, I stood outside the hallway and I came back in. I said, is there anything else you want me to do for you? And I just knew Carlos was going to ask me for money. I just already had determined. This is what Carlos is going to do. This is what all the rest of them do. They're going to ask me for money. So Carlos said, would you pray with me? And so I began to listen to Carlos's story and everything. And he said, could I stay in your worship center and pray? So I walked him down there and I let him sit there. And I went and worked back in my office. And then I thought, I better go check on Carlos. I've got to leave and he doesn't need to stay here with the ladies and everything. So I go back and get him. Carlos comes out of the worship center after I got him because he was praying. And as he leaves the worship center, he hands me a connection card. Now, it's Thursday. I didn't even have to get up on stage and say, now, if everybody fill out a connection card, Carlos did it on his own. I want you to hear what Carlos said. There's a question on the front, and he filled out a lot of information, but he said, how did you hear about First Baptist? And Carlos said, I was walking by and God told me to stop. I was walking by and God told me to stop. And then on the back, he wrote a prayer request. And on the back of his prayer request, he said, on hard days, the only thing I'm craving is faith, because faith is the greatest gift I've ever had. To me, Carlos taught me a lesson that day. You see, I thought I was spiritually with good eyesight, but I can still be spiritually blind sometimes. I thought I had good insight, but I didn't. So you have to ask yourself in this story, am I on the side of the road or am I on the road? You have to ask yourself, am I a part of the crowd that's keeping people away, or am I a part of the crowd that's going to invite somebody to be a part? Because when Jesus says, call him, it's the crowd that goes to call him. Are you willing to go out and call the Great Commission? Are you willing to go and tell people about Jesus? There's a lot of things in this story, but even all of those, are you Bartimaeus? Do you have the faith that can overcome no matter what? Are you willing to throw away the old way of life and not call it back up to patch it up or retrieve it, but to follow Jesus? This morning, I'll be standing right here at the front when we stand up in just a minute. If any one of you wants to talk about a relationship with Jesus Christ, you've never met him, you've never had that opportunity to talk about faith, I'll be glad to do that right here. For others, you may be looking for a church home, a place to be a part of a church family, and we would love to have you be a part of our church family. But all of us, when we stand up, as we sing and the praise team leads us, I think we all have decisions to make. Because if Jesus was here today, which I believe when we come into the church, we have that opportunity for that question. What do you want me to do for you today? And most of the times we leave those doors and we never answer the question or we answer it wrong. What would be your answer today? what would be your point of need?